brought to you once again by On Fire Ministries and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story. And the news behind the news is not about right or left, it's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about ending in prayer, but moving to action. Zechariah 2:5, but I declares the Lord will be a wall of fire to her on all sides, and I will be the glory in her midst. Now, today, as far as kind of an encouraging word, I just want to bring everybody to the attention of the promise in Scripture that we will live life and live it abundantly. That no matter what is going on around us, we do not see with our physical eyes. We see with our spiritual eyes, which are guided by faith. And there is so much doom and gloom out there right now. But ask yourself the question, why are they shortening their timelines? Why are they rushing toward whatever finish line they think they're heading toward? Why are they doing all this? Because things are being exposed like they've never been exposed before. It's because right now, the enemy is raging because God is already on the move. There is so many wonderful things happening in the world. And if you keep watching, just watching the news media and not keeping that other perspective with it, you can get lost. Now, I post a lot of things on Twitter that are the reality of the things that we are facing. However, I always am asking the question, okay, what is the enemy reacting to that God has already done and God is already moving? Well, one of the things is that in China right now, there is a huge revival. Millions, tens of millions of Chinese giving their lives to Jesus Christ. And in addition to that, there is massive revival going on in the Middle East, in places like Iran, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Syria even. In fact, it's becoming so commonplace that missionaries that are going there are asking the question, have you seen the man in white? How did you know that I had seen the man in white, that I'd seen him in a vision or I'd seen him in a dream? How did you know I had seen the man in white? Well, do you want me to tell you about him? His name is Jesus. This is happening so frequently. That's why the Middle East is becoming aflame right now, and we're going to get to that here in a second. That's why the Chinese are having to move up their timelines, because they realize that as Christian population in China grows, that the communist time is drawing short. That's also why here in America, evil is being exposed right now like never before, and that's why there is an invasion about to happen on the southern border on May 11th. It's why there are military-aged Chinese males coming across the southern border right now into the United States. It's why our enemies are becoming more bold because of the revival that's also happening here. And I'm not just talking about the revival that happened at Ashbury. I'm talking about revival that is happening all over the country, not only at college campuses, but also in churches. And that right now, God is preparing us for the time when people are going to see something happen. And they're going to realize that there is real evil in the world. There's also has to be real good. And they want to find it. And they'll realize they need to go to church. Now, that's not actually complete because they really don't need to go to church. They need to come to Jesus. We need to be ready for that. Right now, if that happened, would the churches just here in Spokane, Washington, be ready for that massive influx of people? And not only be ready to receive them and point them toward Jesus Christ, but also to disciple them afterwards and equip them to go back out, preach the gospel of the kingdom, heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, and deliver those who are oppressed by demons. Would they be ready? Would we be ready? Would we be ready as the church here in Spokane, Washington, if 10,000 people were lined up at the Little Spokane River to be baptized, would we be ready right here, right now? Because it's not just going to be pastors that are going to do this. It's going to be the whole body of Christ. And in fact, we are in an era now where it's not just going to be one person. It's going to be an outpouring on all, an equipping of all, a qualifying of all, an empowering of all, an activation of all in the body of Christ that want to be. Now, quite often, we close our own doors by saying things like, I can't, or that is impossible, when Jesus Christ himself said, God is the God of the impossible. And I want to introduce a concept to you today, and I do hope Travis puts this up, because I'm going to be preaching out about it on Sunday. There is a great reset, and that is the counterfeit. Satan always has the counterfeit. There is a great reset, but God has a greater reset. And that greater reset, yes, there might be some hard things, but it drives us to our knees, brings us closer to the Lord, exposes the evil. But we don't stop there. We don't focus on catastrophe. We don't focus on what the enemy's doing. Focus on what God is doing. And we come out of those things with the kingdom advancing even further, even farther, even faster than it has before. There will come a point here, might be at the end of this month, might be in June, might be after that, when something is going to be exposed so evil that people will realize their need for God, and there will be a reset in their lives. It will be a reset in America. There'll be a reset in the world. And it's not the reset of Klaus Schwab. It's the reset of Jesus Christ. And that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, coming to us from Debka File, top Palestinian jihad terrorists killed, infrastructure raised in major Israeli op in Gaza, home front on special status. So there are some reports that up to 11 Islamic Jihad leaders were taken out in this operation. It involved both airstrikes, and it looks like it also involved special operations commandos as well. The bottom line is that the Middle East right now is very tense. There was a reported drone attack as well in Iran, and there are also reports of attacks in southern Lebanon, or at least precursors to attacks in southern Lebanon by the Israelis against Iranian proxies. We're going to see where this heads, but the bottom line is keep your eye on Israel right now and pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Coming to us from Russia. Now, I have to preface this, okay? I have heard so many, Russia's really been winning. Really? I want you to compare the Russian special military operation in Ukraine to the United States sweeping into Iraq or sweeping into Afghanistan. And I'm talking about the initial kinetic third generation maneuver warfare battlefield. What happened, right? And how fast the United States was able to take down entire countries, okay? I want you to compare that to Russia. Now, well over a year on, the entire Russian armored force is almost completely obliterated except for their reserves. And people are still trying to claim that Russia is somehow winning this. Look, just again, I am not like condoning Zelensky and Ukraine or something like that. I know there's a lot of discussion out there. What I'm trying to say is an objective analysis. There are three levels of war: the moral, the mental, and the physical level. The moral level of the war was lost, does not matter. All the rationalizations that I have heard, it was lost the moment that Russia invaded a sovereign country, Ukraine. It was lost the moment. Now, we could talk about what the United States did in other countries as well. I'm just focusing objectively on this. Number two, the mental level of the war began to be lost when the Russians used their regular tactic of artillery barrages against civilian infrastructure. Now, I have heard this fairly uneducated, and I'm putting that very politely, analysis of Ukraine saying, oh, there's a bunch of Russian-speaking people in the east of Ukraine. They're not really Ukrainians. They were. I don't know what history you have been reading, but Ukraine truly became a country in the sense of bonding together as a people group after Holodomor, the Great Starvation by Joseph Stalin, 1932 to 1933. It continued to galvanize under the former Soviet Union, particularly in 1963, when the Confessing Church, this was a Confessing Protestant Church, but there were also some Confessing Orthodox members as well, broke from the state church. In fact, there's a picture of this that exists showing this underground church in the woods. Now, the reason they broke is because the KGB had infiltrated the Orthodox Church, and virtually everyone, in fact, I don't know of one that wasn't, but I'm going to say virtually every leader in the Russian Orthodox Church was a KGB asset, intentionally recruited for that purpose. And in fact, they tried to do it in the Protestant Church and were successful in some cases, but in most cases, people in the Confessing Church said, no, I don't want to be a part of that. And that is why they went underground. Again, 1963. So you fast forward, in 2014, Russia invades Ukraine softly, and they try to begin shutting down churches, Protestant confessing churches, that these were the successors, the sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters of the Confessing Church. They tried to shut them down in eastern Ukraine and replace them by the Orthodox Church. So the Russian Orthodox Church as a religious entity wasn't really a religious entity. It was an arm of the KGB. So that brings us now to today. The mental level of the war, where they're barraging civilian targets, has been lost. And then you see mercenaries like Prigozhin, who are on trying to beg for more ammunition. Now, is that a disinformation campaign? Is it not? I don't know. None of us can really definitively say, but here is what I can tell you. Mercenaries don't win wars. They don't. And if you got mercenaries coming against people fighting on their own ground, historically, the people fighting for their own ground, doesn't matter how long it takes, usually win. But then today, Victory in Europe Day, May 9th, Russia had its annual military parade. And the parade showed something very definitive. Now, for those of you just listening, there is one tank, one, in the Russian military parade, and it is a T-34 tank from World War II. That is how far degraded the Russian military really is. And it's on full display during the VE Day parade there. Oh, but maybe they're trying to... The numbers don't lie, and the confirmed amount of Russian armor that's been destroyed is catastrophic to the Russian military. Now, that doesn't mean that people shouldn't seek peace. It doesn't mean any of that. What it means is, again, objectively speaking, then, they're losing the physical level of the war as well. All right, that moves us next to China. Now, specifically, I want to go quickly to Taiwan, because something is happening there that I think everybody listening on Patriot Radio needs to know. So, in Taiwan, they have been begging the United States for weapons. Now, I'm going to talk about some personal information that I had talking with some folks in Taiwan, but I wasn't speaking with them actually in Taiwan. I was speaking with them in Ukraine. And I was talking to them about U.S. ammunition that was supposed to be coming to Taiwan and how some of those ammunition shipments were canceled. Well, it appears now that $500 million is at least up for consideration going to Taiwan using the presidential drawdown authority. Again, this is coming to us from Open Source Intelligence on Twitter. And it's not said what's part of that military weapons package, but I will tell you that smart strategists, wise strategists, will be very likely advocating for Javelin and Harpoon anti-ship missiles and portable versions of anti-ship missiles that can be moved around on the shoreline. All this tells me is that things are continuing to ramp up in China, which means that things are ramping up regarding the Chinese in America. Coming to us from the Daily Caller, alleged Chinese operative arrested by FBI for opening secret police stations. Oh, hey, look at this, Travis. He attended ritzy Dem events. Yes, he attended ritzy Democrat events. And is that Chuck Schumer two people away from him? Sam Faddis, we got to have him back on the show, talked about this, that the compromise and the infiltration of Chinese intelligence into our government is so deep and profound that it is very clearly influencing policy, or worse, it's paralyzing the United States from responding to what is clearly already a war by China on the United States of America. That brings us next to understanding the threat. Chinese invasion. A 1,000% increase of Chinese nationals attempting to enter the U.S. southern border during this October to February, so October 2022 to February 2023 timeframe. Now, interestingly enough, the large portion of these are military-aged males. If you are looking at this from a geostrategic perspective, it becomes very clear that the potential of Chinese intelligence, sabotage, and assassination teams coming across the southern border is not conspiracy theory, is not anything of that sort. It actually becomes a very high likelihood, and that the Chinese are sending these teams in the United States to, again, weaken, disrupt, demoralize before a world war. Just like they're using Mexican cartels as proxies to bring fentanyl into this country to, again, weaken, degrade, disrupt, demoralize the United States of America. So the question is, if the Biden administration is not going to do anything about this, will Texas, Arizona, and even other states not on the border begin to try to break up these cells that are being infiltrated into the United States of America? You can read more of this, but I want to highlight one thing. Many of these illegals are being intentionally bussed into the interior of the United States by government-funded means. Whew. How deep does the rabbit hole go? Well, at least I think we should not sit around to wait to find out. Now that brings us to the national front. Laura Loomer bringing to our attention one of the most bizarre choices for a venue that I have seen in a long time. Republican and Democrats alike are having a secret 2024 election meeting at the International Spy Museum. Because Travis, that's where we have our election integrity meetings, is at the Spy Museum. So, election officials from Maricopa County, Arizona, and Georgia attended this. And the summit is hosted by CEIR, which is funded by Mark Zuckerberg. Again, at the Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. You can't make this stuff up. And there's people out there still trying to say, oh, where's the evidence? Can we not ask questions? It's going to be interesting to see what happens in Arizona with the the signature batching. But that'll be for a different show. Which brings us next to Understanding the Threat, the article, How Did We Get Here? By John Guandolo. I recommend everybody read this article. They have been putting out, Understanding the Threat has been putting out some fantastic stuff here recently. How did we get here, right? And I want to highlight one thing. Steve Coughlin, a counterterrorism expert, said, quote, once the decision not to identify the enemy is made, it becomes impossible to generate a strategy to defeat him, end quote. In other words, we have to be very clear who the enemy is coming against the United States of America. As Christians, we know who the enemy is, Satan and his minions. Well, the proxies that are being used, right, we need to identify them clearly, the communists and the jihadists and the globalists here. Now, the interesting part about this, how did we get here, is that he highlights a few specific examples of infiltration in the United States government. Nada Prouty is one example, served as a FBI special agent and CIA case officer before being hired and charged with supporting the designated foreign terrorist organization, Hezbollah. Now, what's fascinating about that as well is that there are still people directly affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States government. PJ Media, Biden establishes interagency task force with senior government officials to stop Islamophobia. Well, the guy that he has tapped to do that? Well, he just so happens to be a Muslim brother. Wow. Isn't that interesting? The guy in charge of Islamophobia just so happens to be a Muslim brother? Really? Now, this raises all kinds of questions. So again, these are quotes from the article. Take a look at this. It's absolutely imperative that you do so. I can go through this all day long, but I want to just talk about one part of this. Anytime somebody uses the term Islamophobia or slandering Islam, that is a capital crime. And so when people talk about this, this isn't just some random word. It actually is enshrined in Sharia law. You can read about this in The Reliance of the Traveler. Actually read the documents and stop parroting things and read the primary source documents. And if you want to read a summary, Bill Warner's got a couple great ones. All right. Now that brings us next to the Gateway Pundit and a positive thing that is happening. So with all of these negative things happening, there are a whole bunch of positive things happening. One is people are becoming more courageous. People are encouraging, means putting, giving, speaking courage into people. And here the Gateway Pundit, hero police officer who took down Texas mall shooter and ran into rifle fire as everyone else ran away, is requesting privacy as he processes this life-altering tragedy. In other words, he was just doing his duty. He doesn't want any special fanfare. But he ran to the sound of the guns. He ran through the fire. And as Christians today, God is going to give those that are the most hungry, that are the most drawn and closest to him, he's going to give them the honor of putting them right in the center of the battle. Yes, it might be hard. Yes, those might be hard cases, but God is putting us right in the center of the battle. And he's putting us there because it is an honor and because God is the God of courage. And when he's the Lord of our life, that courage will flow through us as well. Now, if you like have in your heart and you're saying, I just don't know if I could be that courageous. I don't really see myself as some kind of spiritual ninja. I want you to take a look at this very lighthearted video. And hopefully this will not only encourage you, it'll change your mind that you too can be a ninja. And this settles the age-old question, are cats better than dogs or are dogs better than cats? Go ahead and cue it, Travis. Now that was a ninja takedown of a dog over a cat. If you haven't seen this, this is absolutely fantastic. Now I also want to bring up one other thing as well, and that is the issue of, you know, the whole transgender lobby trying to sow confusion into society. Look at, they're trying to make everybody confused. Like they walk around trying to confuse people. Like, is that who, what is that? I can't. And it's creating an alternate reality so that we try to give up the real reality. It's creating a pseudo reality. One example of this is just the simple definition of a woman. So in 99.99% of the cases, the presence or absence of a Y chromosome determines gender. Period. End of story. That is a biological fact. Period. And let me say that again. In 99.99% of the cases, the presence or absence of a Y chromosome determines gender, period. Now, if that's the case, we should know what a woman is, a biological human female. What a male is, a biological human male. And so Babylon Bee took up this issue. And let's listen now.
Your word is woman.
Well, woman, can I have the country of origin, please?
I don't, probably England or Germany or something. Woman.
Can I have the definition, please?
Why don't you ask Judge One that question?
Can I have the definition of woman, please?
No.
Why not? I'm allowed to ask for definitions, right?
The thing is, a woman is a woman is
what she's trying to say is that each person gets to define for themselves what a woman is.
So can you define it?
And that is the mad, mad world that we live in. It's really super simple. And we don't have to countenance, we don't have to accept someone else's fake reality. We can actually live in this one. And that's what God is calling us to do. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has gone online. And you can join everybody, too. The Patriot Radio Movement. At Matt Shea, one on True Social, and hit like, hit share. We're also on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and Amazon. And just don't presume that your friends and family are hearing this stuff. Make sure you share it with them. It'll at least make for some lively discussion, I'm sure. I also want to bring up that if you want to support a great news source, iReadEpoch.com, and use the promo code Patriot Radio. And that brings us now to our guest today. Super excited about this. One more reason the Middle East is in flames is because I believe that things are going to be uncovered here in the near future that are going to be earth-shattering. And part of that involves the Copper Scroll Project and our great friend Jim Barfield, a former arson investigator, but now I'm not going to call you amateur because you're a really good archaeologist, but somebody who is pressing in what God has for us in these last times. Jim Barfield, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here, and I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Well, I want to just talk a little bit with you about, you know, the updates of things with the Copper Scroll Project. But first, I mean, there's just so much happening in Israel right now. If you could give the listeners and everybody watching online just a little bit of an update about what's going on in Israel that you've heard, and And, you know, kind of from your sources on the ground, I think it's always good to have that first-person perspective.
Big things this morning. I monitor a group in Israel that keeps track of a lot of things going on in Israel. Israel has been, they have been bending over backwards trying to get rid of this COVID initiative. The people that I monitor hate it. They hate the lockdowns. They hate everything about it. And apparently most of the people in Israel do too. They can't stand it. But that has really locked us down. The Copper Scroll Project. Haven't been able to get back over there until January of this year. And we had a wonderful time. Had a great time, which I'll tell you about that later. But the news for this morning from Israel is they were prepping. They were preparing. People were getting ready to utilize whatever safety shelters they had available. And apparently there's been an execution of one of the, I'm not going to say which group it was, but there's been execution of a Palestinian or a Muslim group, their leader. And there's a lot of stuff on the table as far as concerns about some type of military action. So take that for what it's worth. But the biggest issues we're having as far as the project, again, has been the COVID lockdowns. But the last we were over there, it was fantastic. It was probably one of the very best trips I've ever had. Got to do several interviews while I was there. And we were able to talk to some people and set up some meetings. Also, we're thinking about planning a good size tour to Israel. So if you guys are interested, if nothing's solid in writing yet, but it's about to be here soon. And we're hoping to get back over there in January, and we're going to try to make it as inexpensive as possible for everyone that wants to go. There's nothing inexpensive anymore. I'm sure you understand that as far as traveling like that. I'm betting the minimum we're going to get it down to is $5,000 a person. And again, that depends on the size of the group. So as far as politically, they are in deep problems. Netanyahu is in deep trouble, and it looked like he's going to get out of this very soon. So that's a quick rundown.
Well, and if anybody is interested on that tour, please message Travis here on the online platform. But Jim, I just want to dive right into the Copper Scroll Project and just everything that's been going on. First, tell us a little bit, because some people have never heard of the Copper Scroll Project. You're going to actually be giving us a live update here tomorrow at On Fire Ministries, 6:30 p.m. Really looking forward to that. But if you can, just kind of paint the picture of how this all started, how you got involved, for the people that haven't heard that before.
The way I got involved in it is Bible study. I was simply doing a lot of Bible study, and one of the things that I was studying, I don't know when, why, or how I got involved in the Dead Sea Scrolls, but I did. I can remember somewhere around 1995, something like that. I started studying the Dead Sea Scrolls, and I really, truly can't tell you why, but I remember reading the Copper Scroll early on, and I thought, this is about the most boring thing I've ever read in my life. It was no spiritual content. It was simply a list of gold, silver, gems, and platters and vessels from the temple. And I just thought it was, you know, a waste of my time. So I set it down, didn't come back to it for a while. And then I was talking to a lady about my timeline research. And it fascinates me as much as the Copper Scroll Project does. But she introduced me to a man named Vendel Jones. Vendel was a character. He was from Texas, and he was truly a character. He was kind enough, him and his wife invited me, my wife, and my son and his children and wife to Texas to spend the weekend a couple of times. And we talked about the Copper Scroll. That was his thing. he was the Copper Scroll guy of the day. And he was very kind to us. He made a lot about the Copper Scroll, about the people that were involved in it. He's the one actually taught me that there were five riders of the Copper Scroll. Two of them were prophets from the Bible, Zechariah and Haggai. And that got me fired up. And then after that point, I began to study more and more. And one cold evening in December, about the 21st, something like that, of 2006, I decided I was going to sit down and see if I could figure out how to understand it, because I was an investigator, a fire investigator for the Lawton Fire Department here in Oklahoma, and I'd won some major awards, one of them being the International Investigator of the Year. And I applied the techniques. Now, listen to this. I applied the techniques that I learned from Bible study. That's why I won I'm not kidding. That's how come I won the award, is I applied the techniques that I used during Bible study, and I really like to go deep. With that, I learned within 5 minutes, I figured out how to understand it, the Copper Scroll. And within 20 minutes, I had figured out the first five on the Copper Scroll. That thing had been around since 1951. And no one had been able to figure out what it meant, how they knew what it was, a treasure map, but they couldn't figure out what they were talking about. I figured it out. And it was this simple, Matt. All I had to do was recognize the correct location. It's like if I told you, get on the highway heading north, turn 3 miles past the gas station, turn right, and I give you the directions to my home, but I didn't give you the address. You wouldn't be able to find it. You wouldn't know what town you're in, what state are you in, what country. Well, I figured out what village it was in. I used the first one I used, as I had a map laying on my desk of Qumran, because I studied Qumran all the time. I studied the Dead Sea Scrolls a lot. And I thought, well, it's in the Valley of Achor, because that was the first line on the Copper Scroll in the Valley of Achor. So I pulled out the map, looked at it, and started looking, matching with the descriptions up from the Copper Scroll. The first one I found within just a couple of minutes. The steps heading east, 40 cubits. Found it. Second one, found it. Third one, found it. It was really within 20 minutes I had the first five figured out. So that lit my fire. I called my son in. It was a cold December night. I said, Sean, come in here and look at this. I said, I think I figured out the Copper Scroll. He laughed. He said, right, Dad. He said, I got to get the kids and go. We got a dinner tonight. And I said, okay, but I said, but I figured out the Copper Scroll. And he said, right, Dad. I said, come here. And within 5 minutes, he was going, oh my gosh, because it's once you have the key, it's a really pretty simple operation. If I spoke Hebrew, it would have been 10 times easier, 20 times easier, but I didn't. I had to look up each and every word on the Copper Scroll with a Strong's Concordance, find the definition, plug it in, then go to the next word, and so on throughout the entire Copper Scroll, which is 12 columns long. It's about 7 feet long, about a foot and a couple of inches wide. It's a really interesting, actually a really beautiful thing. It's got that green patina on it now, and it sits in Jordan, in Amman, Jordan right now in their museum. It's a kind of a small museum, something you'd have in a local place in Oklahoma. It's nothing really special about it that I can see. So after I figured that out, I began to talk to rabbis. I began to talk to people and get them to look at it. And you would be absolutely amazed at how many people, first time they saw it, they were just blown away. And how did you feel the first time you saw it?
That's exactly how I felt, completely blown away. And I'm like, first of all, it was simple. Like, there wasn't any big contrivance or anything. It was just simple investigation, translate, look at the map, break through some paradigms that people had about where things might be, and you're off to the races. So yes, it was absolutely blew me away. It's why I just absolutely love having you on the show. And so I want to just kind of go to the next level of this, next step of this. Like, what can you share about the amount of locations that are there and what is actually potentially there?
At Qumran, what is potentially there?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, that's a big question. In the first location, it's 17 talents of silver service vessels. That's a few hundred thousand dollars just in silver. But then you turn that silver into vessels from the temple or possibly the tabernacle, probably the temple though, from the Temple of Solomon. You turn that into, it's an ungodly amount of valuables, because like the antique roadshow kind of thing, once you got the provenance behind the artifacts, the value goes through the roof. So the next thing is the next location. Location number two is a 900 talents of polished gold. You know how much talent weighs, Matt?
A lot.
A lot. 75 pounds. 900 times 75. And I just so happened, I went online and looked at the price of gold a few minutes ago, and I think it was like 2,053. So do the math. A talent and a pound in an ounce in troy ounces is heavier than a common ounce for us, but it's about 14 ounces to the pound. Do the math on that, and I promise you it's going to be somewhere near $2 billion in one location. Then I'm going to do one more and see if that makes you happy. Number three is what we call the Cave of Treasures. Now, we were calling it the Buried Cave, but we're going to call it the Cave of Treasures because there's some writings in some of the apocryphal books about the Cave of Treasures in that area, and that might be it. Anyway, within that cave are the biggies. Massive quantities of gold, silver, and gems. Actually, that cave was, I think they used that for the primary burial site for their treasures. And then once they filled it up, they transferred the rest of it outside, is the leftovers outside, to bury it under the ruins in the Valley of Achor, which is, again, Qumran. So the biggest possibility just baffles me. It talks about the tabernacle of Moses in two documents. You and I have talked about it before. It was one of them is a marble tablet that was found in Beirut, Lebanon. Oh, my gosh. That thing had a description. The only other thing that matched the description, the Cup Scroll didn't even match the description that's on there, is a book called Emek Hamelik, or a writing called Emek Hamelik, which means Valley of the King. And they wrote down even a massive quantity more than what's on the Copper Scroll. And they gave the actual date that it happened. The date that it happened, the writing of the Copper Scroll was in the year, Jewish biblical date of 3,331. It was amazingly helpful to me because I was able to plot it on my timeline that I do. And it worked out perfect with the research that I'd already done. So the tabernacle, it says on a couple of documents, including Second Maccabees, second chapter, it says that the altar of incense, table of showbread, the tabernacle itself, and the Ark of the Covenant. So is it there? Don't know. They did, History Channel did a story on me, in August, I believe, it's August, September timeframe, and they put it on the History Channel in January. That night, the producer called me from California. He said, Jim, the show we did, he said, it is broken the records for this year for this season. And he says, and it's climate. And the one we did with the History Channel a couple of years ago, it's got like 2,400,000 hits on it. So the word's getting out there about the Carver Scroll Project. I don't particularly care about doing TV shows. I like doing this where I'm sitting and just talk and explain what's going on. I love doing this, but the TV shows are a lot more restrictive. So that's pretty much what's out there, man.
I think that when we hear this kind of stuff, there are all kinds of theological implications. A lot of argument about whether there would be a third temple, whether there, you know, won't be a third temple. If this exists, would a third temple be built? I think the obvious answer to that question is yes. The Temple Institute exists. They built everything except for the Ark for the temple. But this seems kind of controversial, but I actually have a little bit different take, and I know you do too. I mean, if the third temple is built in Jerusalem, would there be a Jewish revival?
Will, I'll tell you this. I spoke to someone, I can't tell you his name. He's a very high rabbi in Israel. One of the first guys I talked to when I got there, and I had a difficult time getting in to see him, Matt. Really difficult. But finally, I got in. Chris Knight and I went in. I had really long hair because I'll tell you about that later. I had long hair. He had long hair. And we sat down in his office, nice office. And he gets up, shake our hand, and he turns around to go back to his desk. And when he turned around, he flipped his coat back. He's got the peyote, the curly cues on the side of his head, the black hat, the black suit, and the tzitzit hanging from his belt or from his garment. And when he flipped his coat back, he had a big 45, looked like Smith & Wesson to me. And he was telling us, okay, you two guys look kind of shady. Here's what I got for you if you want to play games. And, of course, that's not why we were there. We wanted to share our research. And I did. I shared it with him. And within just a few minutes, the guy, he wasn't real tall, probably 5'5". He comes over to me, gets up out of his chair, he comes over to me, and he picks me up out of my chair, and he kisses me on both cheeks, Matt.
Wow.
And he was so excited, and he said, do you know what this will mean to the people of Israel? He said it will be the biggest revival we have ever seen, and maybe ever in the history of Israel. And I believe that. I believe that it's going to be an enormous revival, even for Christians. Christians that don't normally study a lot about the Ark of the Covenant, the vessels and the temple. I do. I did. I studied a lot about that stuff. And I realized that these things, if God intends for it to happen, it's going to happen. If there's going to be another temple, it's going to be built. And you know, no amount of griping and complaining is going to stop that. Because one of the things that I learned about the temple and about the services in the temple, I thought they just killed these little animals and there was a bloody mess and, you know, they just threw them on fire and burned them. Not at all. It is an incredibly clean process. They had water systems to make sure that it was ultra clean. And if you've ever been around the Jewish people when they were eating, they eat ultra clean. That's why they call it kosher, is because they want their meals to be ultra clean. That's a commandment from God to eat clean food. No pigs, no catfish, no crawdads. You can't eat that stuff because they're unclean. Well, the temple process and the services were incredibly special. Each one of the biblical feasts, let's start with Passover. Passover is about the signing of the bridal contract. The Pentecost is about the giving of the contract and the consummation of the contract, not the marriage. That comes together, and then in Feast of Trumpets, it's the time of the wedding feast, and Trumpets is the marriage when all the kings got pronounced kings, and then the marriage happens, and the Day of Atonement is the consummation of the marriage. symbolically, they sprinkle blood. They enter into the Holy of Holies, an incredibly private place. Only one priest goes in there per year, and he sprinkles blood on the Ark of the Covenant, and it's symbolic of the consummation of a marriage. And then Tabernacles is the feast, and it is a feast. I've been to a lot of Tabernacles celebrations, and I've never, ever been to such amazing Bible studies in my life. Imagine sitting by the campfire, all your buddies around you, like 20, 30 people, and you're all sitting there discussing Bible to the hilt, deep conversations. It was just incredible, still is incredible. So that's a kind of a quick summation about the temple and what I believe. I think, by the way, that another temple is coming.
So, Jim, we got about 2 minutes left. A real quick overview of what can people expect tomorrow night for the update.
Tomorrow night, what I wanted to do is kind of give them a little bit of what I gave tonight, just to, because I'm sure if your group has grown as much as I think it has, I'd like to update them on what the Copper Scroll is. And then I want to tell you guys about about Qumran, about the things that we're learning from Qumran. And I'm hoping to have some pictures of the last trip I made to Qumran, because they've really changed it. They've really updated it. So those are what I want to do, is make you aware of the effect that the Dead Sea Scrolls is going to have on Christianity and the world, on Judaism as well.
Jim Barfield, CopperScrollProject.com. Thank you so much for everything that you're doing. And it's just always great to have you on. So tomorrow night, 6:30 p.m. right here at On Fire Ministries, we look forward to having you with us.
I'm looking forward to it, Matt. You have a wonderful evening.
All right. God bless. Jim Barfield, former arson investigator turned archaeologist, CopperScrollProject.com. You can see it right there. Check it out, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and just send him a message as well. And you can see some of the maps and things down there, and you know, kind of the major change in paradigm that happened because people were looking for the temple treasure in the wrong place. And tomorrow night, Jim is going to be going through that. And also, he always brings in a few new things that he hasn't talked about before concerning the red heifer and some other things. I'm sure he'll be talking about that as well. All right, I want to end the program today. We were a little fast ending last time. Preparedness in the You Are the Plan segment today, in practical preparedness, plant a garden. Now, here in Spokane, we look at the time that we plant gardens based on if there is still snow on Mount Spokane or most of it is gone. Well, most of it is going away right now, and we're getting ready to plant gardens, okay? And we should all plant gardens. Well, Matt, I don't know if I can plant a garden. Well, can you find a bucket? Plant a tomato plant. Do something, but plant a garden this year and get used to planting a garden. You get fresh vegetables out of it. You get to learn how things grow, and you get to learn how to process seeds. It's fantastic. And it also is something you can do with your family. And more important than that, it brings a sense of self-sufficiency in the best way possible. Now, Adam was a farmer. He tilled the earth, is what the scripture says, and this is confirmed in books like the Book of Jubilees, which is not canon, but does confirm some of the details. And throughout the rest of scripture, you see farming and ranching. Well, all of us can do this, even if we have an apartment, even if we have maybe just a little balcony. We can all grow a garden, and this is one way we can not only bless other people, but we can actually receive the blessings of God. I want to also mention about the banks. So from many, many different sources, more banks are about to fail. So this brings up kind of a question, well, what do we do in a time like this? Well, there are godly stores of wealth, and if you go through Scripture, there are four things God really considered money: livestock, land, gold, and silver. But there are also some things that we can practically do in this time, right? We're hearing a lot about banks, but have you heard much about credit unions? Just leave that out there for you to think about. And are you truly debt-free? And I'm not talking about money that's leveraged for investments or something like that. I'm talking about your personal debt load. Do you have a whole bunch of student loans or something like that, or a whole bunch of credit card debt, or do you only have maybe your mortgage, right? Like, where are you in that spectrum? Now, scripturally, we should be debt-free. In fact, it is a kingdom concept to be debt-free, and God wants to multiply in this time, and there's going to be plenty of opportunities. As we see the economy continuing to go down, you're going to see opportunities begin to abound. Are you ready for those opportunities? Or is fear driving your decisions? The ultimate reality is, as General Flynn put it, we are the plan. There is no grand plan. We are the plan. And the more that we can do at the local level, through preparedness, practical preparedness, and planting gardens, the more we can do at the local level of being educated on who the enemy is coming against the United States of America, the communists, the jihadis, and the globalists, and what they're doing right now, well, the more likely it is that we come out of this with a greater reset. We come out of this in a place where the gospel of the kingdom is no longer shunned and scorned and mocked, but it continues to spread and spread farther and faster than it ever has before. So tonight, take a moment with your family. Pray about what the Lord would be having you do in this time, what opportunities he may already be presenting to you, and any attitude or motivations or mindset that may need to be changed. This is Matt Shea. Thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you. And he is making this generation the greatest one. The awakening is here. Keep up the fight.